Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. I hope you're all very well indeed on this Christmas Eve. It's great to have you. And it's great to have you listening, I should say. And just to let you know, we are still welcoming entrants into our fantastic Christmas giveaway. You just have to come on air and identify a piece of music and you will win. That's it. And as I say, I will give you a nice little hand if needed, so don't feel under any pressure. Right, so that's 086 60 25,000, the name and where you're from, or you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000, and we'd be more than happy to enter you that way as well. Right, so coming up on the programme, just to give you an idea, and I want to invite you to watch the show as well, by the way, because all our shows throughout the course of the year are very, very visual, and today is no different. If you missed the first hour, you missed the accent. Richard and Tori Gilpin, they sang live for us. We gave away some great prizes. And then we had Trudy and Kian O'Donnell in as well, too, for a very special performance. Coming up in this hour, we're going to be joined by Bishop Niall Cole, who is moving to this parish, of course, and Bishop Andrew Forster, who's a regular guest with us throughout the year, but particularly at this time of year, which is nice. We also have a very special treat for you. We've got music from the Donegal Youth Orchestra. They were very kindly here, nice and early, getting all set up, and we really are looking forward to them. And then later on in the programme, we have the Conwall Singers, and we've also cobbled together a duet. It's Shannon Wilkins, it's Donna Marie Doherty, it's Joe Dex figuring out how he's going to get a backing track played to them whilst they sing live for us. It's all go. It's very exciting. And we also want your comments, your calls, your requests, whatever it is. If you want to say hello to anyone, pass on a special Christmas message, well, you can do so by using our regular numbers, 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or calling 074 91 25,000. Now, you're very welcome back to the programme. Very shortly, the Right Reverend Andrew Forster, Bishop of Derry and Raphoe, will be joining us. But first, I get to say good morning to Bishop Niall Cole, who's Bishop-elect of Raphoe and Diocesan Administrator of Ossory. Good morning, Bishop. Thank you so much for joining us this Christmas Eve. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Greg, and good morning, and happy Christmas to you and all the listeners.
Bishop, when do you take up your position in earnest, if that's the right phraseology?
Yes, I'm still kept busy here in Kilkenny as Diocesan Administrator, and under the church law, my jurisdiction, as they say, begins on the 25th of January when I'm installed in Letterkenny. And I have no worries at the moment because Monsignor Kevin Gillespie is a very competent administrator, and that allows me to finish up my work here in Ossory in Kilkenny and clear my desk.
How long have you been based in Kilkenny for, Bishop?
3 years. Mm. And I will be installed in Letterkenny just 3 years and 3 days after my installation and my ordination as bishop in Kilkenny. So it has been a short time here. Great time of learning, I have to tell you, living down here in South Leinster and the land of hurling, the black and amber. So I've learned a bit about hurling, and I miss that. And I miss their good roads.
Well, with Bert's fortune, sorry, with Letterkenny's fortunes improving on the pitch and the county, in fact, beginning to improve all the while, we might become a hurling county for your return home, or at least sometime soon after. Yes. Bishop, how did you come to be appointed Bishop of Raphoe? And you'll have to excuse me if I've got some of the terminology wrong, Bishop, but I'm just speaking as naturally as I might always do. Did it come completely out of the blue for you? And how does that happen?
Yes, it came as a surprise to me, as being appointed Bishop of Ossory came as a surprise. You see, you don't apply to be a bishop. You're appointed by the Pope. And so three and a half years ago, I got a phone call from the office of the Apostolic Nuncio in Dublin. That's the Pope's ambassador. And he asked me to come to a meeting. At that time, I was parish priest of Donegal Town and Clare. And so I was surprised. So a few days later, I made my way to Dublin, and I was told that I had been made Bishop of Ossory. I expressed my surprise that they were sending an Ulster man so deep into Leinster, someone who knew
Testing
nothing
you
about
now,
hurling.
testing you, Bishop.
And in fact, I am the 96th Bishop of Ossory, and I'm the first Ulster man to hold that office.
Wow.
So it was a, someone says I'll appear in quizzes in the future. Although the secondary saint here in Kilkenny, and I don't know if people how well people know Kilkenny, but you have Saint Kieran and then Saint Canice. Now Saint Canice was an Ulster man. He was from Dungiven, but he was never bishop. He was the abbot. He was a monk, and indeed the oldest cathedral here in Kilkenny City is called Saint Canice's. Its origins are before the Reformation. But it's now the Church of Ireland Cathedral. So I say there was a bit of an Ulster touch here in earlier centuries.
Bishop, if you were appointed the head of Donegal County Council, or you became mayor, or you took over the reins of a big private company, I might ask, what is your ambition, or what do you hope to achieve? Is that a question that might be fair to ask as you head to take over as Bishop of Raphoe?
I think it's a very apt question because we're living through a time of tremendous change in society, in family, and in church. Our society has become very individualistic, very materialistic. For many people, God is totally marginalized, if not rejected altogether. So your question is very, very apt because the church is the longest surviving institution in the Western world, if not the whole world. We've been around a long time, but we have to minister in changing cultures and in changing times. I remember as a young fella of 16 years of age, hearing Pope John Paul II speaking in Dublin, and he said that every generation is a new continent for Christ, by which he meant that your parents or your grandparents may have been people of faith, but it doesn't necessarily follow that that faith will be transmitted, particularly in the context of our very individualistic and secular society. So my task is sort of to point that out, to say that the transmission of faith is not something now that's automatic. And then I'll remind people that the key people in transmitting the faith are parents. And why do parents transmit the faith? Because they want their children to know God. They want their children to find meaning and purpose and direction in life. And as you know, today in the Western world, where many people are forgetful about God and where children are not taught to pray and brought up to pray, well, there's a consequence for that. Now, it doesn't often get covered yet in the Irish media, but that will change because the critique of the dominant culture of today has to emerge as well. If we're truly a pluralist society, we can't. And so I think that a lot of people today worry about the mental health of their children. And I spent 25 years teaching, most of them at third level. I was a lecturer for 19 years in St. Mary's University College in Belfast, up until about 6 years ago. So I have a fair bit of contact over the years with people, with young people. And I know that the task of the church in the decades ahead now is to try to find a way to communicate with them the joy of the gospel, which is, of course, is a phrase that Pope Francis kept using, the joy of the gospel. And so that'll be my so I'm asking, so my program then, and I say, is to repropose the gospel to the people of the diocese.
To one short question, and then maybe a second that might not be quite so short. Is it cyclical, though? We talk about a changing society, and I recognize everything you talk of there, and to some extent, of course, I'm part of it. But is this is not necessarily a one-way road. I'm sure there are times in our history where, we've abandoned a religion or didn't feel we needed it or what have you. I just can't imagine the churches not being full, God forbid, if a third world war were to start or something like that. Often then all of a sudden we start trying to, if I can put it hedge our bets, right? So
yes.
Are we? Is this a road with no turns and it is only going one way? Or is this a period of history that we are alive through, but things may very well go back to where they were at some point?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think it's about going back to the past. It's about, in a sense, looking forward to the future and trusting in where the Holy Spirit will lead us. But on your question there, a few weeks ago, I was asked to give a talk to university students in Dublin. There were, you know, medical students and law students at UCD, Trinity and UCC. To my great surprise, many of them had an enormous interest in faith. Often they had come from families where the parents didn't bring them up in the faith. So the attraction of the gospel is as true now as it ever was. And I don't know if you followed developments on the continent, but in France, for example, last Easter, 10,000 young people were baptized. They went through the order of Christian initiation. So it's an interesting thing that in a highly secularized country like France, and you know its long history of secularization, that there's indications today on the ground that some people are once again discovering their need to know Christ.
Well, with that in mind, and I am not in any way trying to phrase this to pitch one faith against another or one religion against another. That is not my MO. But, you know, we can't have a situation, surely, where Christianity is underground, right? And then we discover that it's becoming more popular than it might. Do we need to bat for Christianity a little bit more? Because sometimes I look around and it seems that being a Christian is either being discouraged, it's being legislated out of spaces, and it's almost like saying you're a landlord in this day and age, whilst, you know, we accommodate and celebrate other faiths. Now, as I say, I am not in any way trying to pitch one against another, but do we need to maybe, if you are of a Christian faith, to be more vocal, be more proud of it, to bat for it a little more?
Well, I don't like to set up a conflictual situation.
I was trying to avoid that, Bishop. My apologies.
Of course, and I accept that. But of course, ordinary people need to, you know, a lot of them today feel very lost. A lot of chaos in life today. A lot of people struggle with what values, what do I teach my children? What should they aspire to? And so the Christian message has so much, you know, to offer. It's a spiritual message first and foremost for the individual, but its values do so much to build up society. And of course, our culture, Ireland, the whole of Europe, it grows out of a Christian culture. I used to teach a bit of social ethics in the past to university students, and they've come up with the idea, that's human rights, that's my human rights. And I just ask them, why do you say, what's the basis for saying that, talking about human rights? Because if you understand that term only in a secular context, then you say, oh, you have human rights because the government gives you human rights, or you have human rights because the people voted a government in that gave you human rights, or it's because it's in the Constitution. But those rights, if that's all those rights are based on, then they can be changed. Like, we have changed our constitution and governments have. So what I'm trying to say is that the fundamental values of Western society are Christian. Because the human person is made in the image and likeness of God, then they have a dignity that precedes what the government gives them, precedes what Parliament gives them. What I'm trying to answer your question by saying is that the Christian teaching is absolutely at the center of what makes for a good society. And you're absolutely right. We haven't been able to talk about that enough in recent times. I suppose sometimes journalists themselves talk about a climate of political correctness that they have to operate within themselves. I do think that is insufficient, and I do think that in our society there will be a retrieval of the deeper meaning. And a large Islamic population in the West is excellent for this, because people see Muslims, they see a coherence in their lives, their commitment to marriage, their commitment to family. And sometimes post-Christian Westerners ask, have we any resources in our culture, to end the chaos? And I would say yes, a retrieval of the gospel, a retrieval of a sense of message of Jesus, of what Christmas is all about. Sorry, yeah. I put it in there, but...
No. I was going to say that journalists, as you described, shouldn't cherry-pick, though. If you're going to sort of go down that road, it needs to be applied equally or not at all, I'd be of the view. I'm joined by Reverend Andrew Forster, the Right Reverend Andrew Forster, Bishop of Derry and Raphoe, whose patience, I would imagine, has been greatly tested today in trying to get here. And I hope you weren't thinking any nasty thoughts, Bishop, and I'm sure you weren't, as you battled with the traffic.
Greg, I was battling with the traffic a little bit, but I'm delighted to be here. And it's a really delight to hear Bishop Niall in the car and now in the studio as well. And Bishop Niall, on behalf of the Church of Ireland community in Derry and Raphoe, we really look forward to welcoming you back to your home diocese as Bishop and look forward to working together for the cause of the gospel, for the good news of Jesus Christ here in Donegal.
Thank you, Bishop Andrew. You and I met once on the fringes of a conference.
That's right.
But your colleague, Adrian Wilkinson, the Bishop, the Church of Ireland Bishop of Ossory, has been a great friend of mine here in Kilkenny, and we've done a lot of work together. Indeed, we represented our respective churches at conferences in Rome and in Canterbury last year. And so the work of Christian fellowship, of building up communion with the other Christian traditions, will be very important to me in my ministry in Letterkenny. And of course, I'm from East Donegal, I'm from St. Johnstone, so there's a strong Protestant culture there that I've grown up among, Presbyterians, Church of Ireland, Methodists. So I'm very at home in the ecumenical environment, and I really look forward to our getting to know each other well and working closely in the service of the church in these parts.
I strongly suspect, Reverend, you're going to become firm friends. I just get that sense.
no doubt. And a lot of what Bishop Niall was saying there, it just absolutely chimes with my own heart and my own priorities in ministry. Because, for all of us who are followers of Jesus Christ, it's the most wonderful thing in the world to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And I think what we're actually seeing in society is people of my generation, I'm in my late 50s, and a lot of people in my generation sort of walked away from church. Mm-hmm. And what we're almost seeing now is their children saying, well, actually, that sort of secularization, it hasn't really worked. Mm-hmm. And there's a longing for something that connects with the challenges that they face, and a longing for something that gives them a wholeness in life.
I just think sometimes there's something within people, and if you push people back, right, and I'm saying maybe the media has, or society has, or politics have. You push people back, eventually they will begin to push again. We're seeing it very much in America, and I think sometimes it can become quite polarized if you go down that route. I think we still have a window of opportunity where people can feel free to express themselves and to celebrate their religion, whatever faith they're part of, Bishop.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of truth to that. I think what we have seen, and I think what's happening in society now, and it's always hard to sort of plot where society is going, but a lot of people will say to me, who are maybe outside of the life of the church, oh, but I'm a spiritual person and so on, and I absolutely get that. But for me, being a spiritual person is about pointing us to the person of Christ, pointing us to Jesus, and the fullness of life that comes through a living faith in Christ, and that relationship that we can enjoy day by day with Him. And the interesting thing, and I'm sure Bishop Niall's seen this in Kilkenny, we're seeing a lot of young people actually really attracted to the things of faith, who are living out faith in a way that's impacting the world around them. It might be a small world around them, but it's making a really positive difference.
I think there's multiple reasons for that, but even if it were just for this reason that I'm going to outline, life is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, and I think us parents have to take quite a bit of responsibility in relation to that, discipline, guidance, right or wrong, yes, no. You need that. Kids, I think, thrive with a set of rules, a time you go to bed, a time you get up, you know, and sometimes, and I'm a parent, I'm criticising myself, sometimes they will seek that out, and it's not when you go to bed, but, you know, the rules, maybe then of a church, of a religion, that's what becomes attractive. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I can see the logic of it potentially being there.
Yeah, no, I completely get what you're saying, and but for me, there's something, rules are you know, are important things as they keep us on the right track. For me, the rule of life as a Christian is born out of a relationship with God.
Mm.
And then that brings that rule of life as the way I should live my life in a way that honours him, that honours the people around me, that makes a positive contribution to the world around me. I just a couple of months ago, I was at the funeral of a very close friend of my late father's, and this man had asked me to speak at his funeral. And one of the things that I said about him was, he always brought out our better self. And I think there's something about that in the society that we live in, that we need to bring out our better self all the time, the better side of us. Whereas in that individualistic culture that Bishop Niall was talking about, in this world that just seems to look at what's important for myself rather than ourselves, I think there's something about trying to bring out the better self. And you know, that's what Jesus tells us. You know, we're to love our neighbours as ourselves.
Okay,
so
I'm going to keep you with me, but Bishop Niall Cole will have to leave us shortly. So, Bishop, if you don't mind, maybe, I don't know if you want to just to speak to the people, you know, through your own words, through prayer, whatever way you wish to use your time, I will give it to you if that's okay.
Yes, I'm just on my way to a blessing on the parade in Kilkenny. It's the centre. It's the centre of the Christmas experience for many people here annually. So the message of Christmas is so poignant, in a way, so simple. That the eternal Son of God is born into a human family, poor people, people on the margins, and that God draws close to us through Christ Jesus, and that he is born in vulnerability as a baby. He can't meet his care for himself, he needs others. But that child is destined for a calling, for a vocation that will lead him to proclaim the gospel, to go out and preach and teach and win disciples. And eventually that child whose birth we celebrate will die on the cross, but the Lord, the Father will raise him up in the last day. So that's what my thought is today, that the Christ whose birth we celebrate at Christmas was one who was born for a purpose, and that he is Lord, and that the great challenge, back, Greg, to your question at the start, for Bishop Andrew and me and people like us in leadership in the churches, is that we've had to help our people rediscover the meaning of their baptismal calling, to their call to baptism to build the kingdom and to share the faith with their children and to love God and neighbour. So with those thoughts, I say God bless to all the people of Rafoe, the Catholics, the Anglicans, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, people of no faith, people who are seekers, people who are sure that they're atheists. And just to say that the message of Christmas reminds us that at the end of the day, everyone has a dignity. That everyone, whether rich or poor, that they have a dignity. And for the Christian, that's rooted in the fact that they are made by God and loved by God. So happy Christmas. Nollag Hona Dath.
Thank you, Bishop. And enjoy the hurling while you can.
Yes. Thank you. God bless.
Okay, God bless you too. Thank you very much indeed. Bishop Niall Cole there, who takes up his position. And as I said to Bishop Cole and the Right Reverend Andrew Forster, I'm sure you're going to forge a strong relationship. This Christmas, what are your reflections this Christmas, Reverend?
Yeah, interesting. A couple of things have sort of struck me. One was sort of good and bad. Just last on Saturday, I did something that doesn't often happen. I went with my wife, Heather, to do our Christmas shopping in the supermarket, you know? And we went round, with family all coming, and we were getting everything that we needed. And then we got to the till, and Heather and I had this sort of guesses how much it was going to cost. Now, it cost more than I guessed, which shows you how often I go. And as we were sort of bagging everything up and paying for things and so on, I was thinking, my goodness, you know, we can afford to come and do this. But a lot of people, that's a real stretch for. And I sort of felt for those who maybe Christmas actually brings a lot of pressure as well as a lot of joy. But the thing that really blessed me when I was walking out of that shopping centre, just beside it, so I live in Derry, as you know, mm-hmm. but just beside the tills were these huge baskets, really big baskets, from the Foyle Food Bank. They were overflowing.
Yeah.
So it struck me that the people who had gone in to do their shopping, as they were buying all these things for themselves, for their families, they were still remembering that there are people who can't do that. And the baskets were, you know, they were big crates, really. Not baskets is the wrong thing, but crates that were overflowing with the generosity of people. And that really sort of touched me, to be honest, as you saw something that was really positive in a time when there can be a lot of stress for people as well. The second thing was Sunday night, I was at a carol service. And in our tradition, the carol service, you know, it's carols and readings. And you've 9 lessons that tell the story right from the, you know, the Garden of Eden right through. And there was one of the passages that was written by Isaiah 700 years before Jesus was born. And Isaiah was a prophet sort of looking into the future. And he was looking into the future about the birth of the Messiah. And he used 4 little phrases, if you like, to describe what this Messiah would be like. And it really blessed me to think about Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And the Wonderful Counselor, you know, somebody who comes alongside us to guide, to help, to accompany us. The Mighty God, a God who's mighty in power, you know, the Creator God, but yet mighty in love. And his love for you is mighty and unbreaking. This idea of God as the everlasting Father who draws us into his family in love and in grace. And then the Prince of Peace, the one, you know, the Hebrew word for peace is shalom, which talks about a sense of wellness in ourselves. And so that really touched me, that sort of thing. And to such a degree that tomorrow morning in the cathedral, that's the little passage that I'm going to give a reflection on, those 4 elements of what it actually means, this Messiah who comes into the world in the form of Jesus as this Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace.
I struggle through the year with the fact that certainly the Republic of Ireland, we're a very, very wealthy country, and you talk of those that are struggling this time of year, and what I struggle with is the fact that they don't need to be struggling. That we our income in this country is such that really there should be no child in poverty. There should be no one going without food. There should be no older person who's alone or going without care or waiting on step-down care from hospital or home care packages. And I really struggle just to, you know, you can sort of pray for these things or you can hope for these things, yet it's within our gift as a country to do it, right? And we don't do it. And you talk of those overflowing baskets, which is wonderful, and it's a way people can do something, but we could be doing something on a much greater scale, you know, if we used our resources in a fair and equal way.
And the, you know, the thing that it's wonderful to see that sense of personal generosity in people giving to that, but yet, you know, we live in one of the wealthiest countries in the world, quite literally. It mightn't feel like that at times, but we do.
Well, that's it,
and there's something systemic within us that in our growing wealth, we haven't addressed some of the big issues of inequality that we see in the poverty that's still there. And unfortunately, poverty seems to grow as opposed to disappear.
That is the thing.
And in the world that we live in, you know, in the Western world that we live in, a lot of poverty is pretty hidden. You know, it's behind a door that looks quite nice, you know, and the house might seem quite nice, but yet the cupboards are empty and it's hard to heat and so on. So I think there is something systemic in our society that we have, our wealth has made us maybe a little bit more self-centred on the individual, whereas we've forgotten the collective. And there's something that enriches a whole society when we think of collectively about those who are most vulnerable amongst
us. But we can't do it. We need those sometimes to do it on our behalf, and I just wish we could more. Reverend, your message for us this year, I know you've touched very importantly on your two experiences. One, I just wonder, you mentioned you're edging closer to 60. Are we going to see more of these shopping trips? I don't know. You're finally discovering the joy of the middle aisle.
I suppose
I could just, sorry, I'm sorry for a moment, and I don't want to dilute your point. I could just see you rocking up to that till with the Parkside drill.
I'm not the most practical. I have a brother who can literally turn his hand to anything, and I sort of struggle to change a plug. You know, that's the way it goes.
Anyway, sorry, I took you off. I took you off your train of thought there. Yeah. My apologies.
Oh, not a problem. One of the things that I will so enjoy over the next few days is having family around. Tomorrow for us will be quite small, and then on the 28th it's quite big. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people coming to the house, and I've blessed with three adult children. One still lives with us, two are in England, they'll be home, and so on, and son-in-law and all of that. So we really look forward to that. And I'm sure for people listening today, that's what they're thinking about, getting people together and around us and supporting us. And that's part of the beauty of Christmas. And what I would love to say to them is, remember that at the heart of why we do that family gathering at this time of year, at the heart of that is this other small family. You know, Mary, Joseph, the baby Jesus. And for me, having that sense of that family at the heart of what we do in our family brings that enrichment, that joy, that love to it all. And that would be my hope and prayer for all of our listeners, that as you celebrate, and I hope you are able to celebrate even when it is difficult at times, that you'll find that at the heart of your family can be this holy family who can bless you with that holiness and love.
And 30%, maybe it's even higher in Donegal, of our older people live alone.
Yeah.
And a little phone call, giving is not always money or material. A little phone call can make, because some people are dreading the fact the shops are closed tomorrow, and it's not because they want to, they need something, it's because that's their contact with the outside world. So maybe we could...
Knock a door, pick up a phone. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Reverend, I'm sorry that you had to endure the traffic here, but you've reached an awful lot of people with your words today.
Been
so
lovely.
Hopefully it was worth it. And next year, perhaps we will have you and Bishop Cole in situ together.
And Greg, can I just say...
We couldn't ask him to come from Kilkenny.
No, can I just say, on behalf of all the listeners, I always enjoy your show, and thanks for what you do, because I think a lot of what Highland does is to give us a sense of glue, if you like, in the county that brings us together and keeps us up informed, and it's always done in such a winsome and good way. So thank you so much, Greg.
Well, that makes it all worthwhile. Bishop, thank you so very much. That's the Right Reverend Andrew Forrester, Bishop of Derry and Raphoe. And earlier we spoke to, of course, Bishop Niall Cole, who is Bishop Elect of Raphoe. He'll be joining us towards the end of January, currently Diocesan Administrator of Ossory, and he still has plenty to do down there as well. Now we have the Donegal Youth Orchestra in studio with us. We'll be speaking to John McIver very shortly, but we're going to hear from the orchestra now, conducted today in the absence of Vincent Kennedy by Irene Donnelly Tinney. So whenever you are ready, take it away. Mm-hmm. All right, that was Away in a Manger and Silent Night from the Donegal Youth Orchestra. We're going to hear more from the orchestra and have a chat to John McIver after we take a quick break.